The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
And hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you, and we are talking to you on Friday, second round of the Travelers Championship in Cromwell, Connecticut, underway. Jordan Spieth had a great opening round. We'll talk about that a little bit and how well everybody is playing there. That, of course, is the same course that last year Jim Furyk shot his record 58 round. So it does give up some low scores, and Jordan Spieth opened with a 63. So, again, he's out on the course now. He's already teed off for his next round, his second round. It's been a little bit up and down so far for Jordan Spieth, but he, along with a number of other guys, at 6 under par, early again, very, very early in the second round in Cromwell, Connecticut. Frank Bassett joins us, as always, from the Nashville studios. How's everything going in Nashville? Are you getting any of that that golf moisture coming up your way, Frank? Yeah, a little bit, I guess.
It's coming. It's I'm looking out the windows of the studio right now, and it's, man, the trees are whipping. Pretty blue, puffy, puffy clouds, blue skies, but it's on its way to us, and we expect it by about noon or one, and they say it's going to be rugged. So,
yep. They're saying all the way through in the Gulf region and the Mid-South and everything, it's going to be a couple of days of bad weather.
I'm going to send out the weather dog. If he doesn't come back, we know it's windy. If Bogey the weather dog comes back wet, we know it's raining. So there, that's scientific weather reporting.
We at least know that it shouldn't affect things in Cromwell, because it'd be quite a ways up there if the weather got up to there. So I think right now the weather's decent enough, and they should be fine for the Travelers Championship. We also have with us, and let's get right to him because he's a busy man and a lot of things to do, Steve Johnson, managing partner with Hank Haney Golf, joins us as well. Steve, how are you doing today?
Good morning, guys. Good morning.
Hey, I was just mentioning that that Spieth got up to the best round, first round he's ever had. I mean, it was amazing that he got off so well, because that's been one of his Achilles heels for the last year and a half, is he's always kind of starting in a hole. And even when he's won tournaments or done well, it's because he's come back on Saturday and Sunday. But he doesn't do that well, or hasn't been, on Thursday and Friday. And yet he comes out yesterday and shoots a 63 and had a nice lead going into today's second round. Do you have any feelings about Spieth? People want to say that he's not playing up to snuff, and he's been disappointing. The U.S. Open wasn't as good as it could have been. We've talked about his swing a million times, and certainly his swing is his swing. It's a little bit unique, but that's not unusual on the PGA Tour. Any reason? Is there something in his head, you think, if you could get into his head, that makes Spieth not quite what we maybe expected this year?
You know, I think he's just trying to get better, Tim. He's at a point in his career that, you know, he sees weaknesses in his game. And, I mean, gosh darn, you think, if you're talking about full swings, how can he be so bad off the tee, and how can he be so good from the fairway? I mean, he's number one in approach to the green, strokes gained, and he's 108th off the tee. And he was talking about it yesterday after his round, that you have got to hit the fairways on this course. Now, if you do hit the fairways, you've got a lot of short irons in, and par 70 golf course, the par fives aren't even that long, but you've got to hit the fairways. So it sounded like he did well yesterday with putting himself in position, and his approaches to the greens are really second to none. Now, I watched a little bit yesterday of some of his round, and, you know, he hit right over the pin, but a couple shots he hit a little bit too far and made good up and downs. But, you know, I think now that he's settled on what he's going to do with his putting, and he talked about it again after his round yesterday. You know, he was trying to figure out what to go with in his putting. He's got the same putter. He's got Old Faithful back in the bag, his Scotty Cameron, and I think he's going to stick with that. But he's searching for what his go-to is is he going to look at the hole? Is he going to look at the ball? What is he going to do? So, I think he's trying to figure that out. And yesterday, I think it's hard to believe that was the best first round score he's ever had, as well as he's done, as many tournaments as he's won, for as little as he's been on the tour. You know, you think that's a surprise, but, now he's on the course right now, and who knows what's going to happen today. and
he's one. Yeah, he's but he, over
you would
so
think
far.
That he would. You think that he would have good conditions in the morning. It's supposed to be beautiful there today.
Yeah, yeah. They're saying the weather's going to be perfect for scoring. Again, he's one over because he had a birdie on his third hole. He started on the back ten, back nine. He had a birdie on the third hole and then double bogeyed his fourth hole, which is a par five. So he had a seven on a par five, which is a killer for anybody and certainly for a PGA Tour pro. But I'm also curious, Steve, talking about Spieth, he seems like he's even getting slower and taking more time, which is frustrating because nobody likes a slow player. And even when you're watching and whatnot, it's like, okay, just hit the ball already. Are there too many thoughts going in his head? Have you had issues with that with some of the players you've worked with when they just never really want to commit and they're not sure which club, and then they want to throw more grass in the air and catch the wind? Sometimes you just have to hit the ball. What would you be your advice for him?
Well, he does like to get a lot of information, and I think he's trying to be so precise in his calculation of what exactly to do, and he won't pull the trigger until he's confident, until he buys into 100% what he's trying to execute. You know, I think that comes over time. We saw Sergio Garcia many years ago go through stages where he couldn't take the club back. I mean, that's not Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth is just right. Needs to narrow down the information that he's considering when it's his turn. I mean, he has 45 seconds to play a shot, Tim, and you know that. I mean, that just gets back to the question: if the PGA Tour doesn't penalize a guy for slow play, then what incentive does a guy have to play faster? I mean, are they going to penalize him $500 every time that he gets, you know, the bad time? You know, so what? I mean, they're playing for millions of dollars.
Yeah. We're talking again with Steve Johnson, managing partner at Hank Haney Golf. That leads me to the drug testing. Steve, we haven't had a chance to ask you, Mr. Hot Opinion himself, about the changes in the drug testing, going to a full-on blood test for golfers, and them saying, the PGA Tour, if you will, we want to take this seriously, and we want to look at everything, and we want to be official, if you will, about that and not let anything slip through the crack, and also come out and announce it. We're not going to be secretive, as we may have been in the past, about what results might be. How do you feel about those changes?
I mean, I'm not so sure that those are great changes. I mean, I'm sure there's rationale to it. The other sports do it. The other sports know exactly what's happening with players on and off the field. But I thought it was working pretty well for the PGA Tour the way it was. You know, I mean, it's no one's business what they do within their own sport. Now, I mean, you can say that there's social responsibility, but I mean, gosh, I don't know why. I don't know enough about the rationale behind disclosing and doing blood testing. I know they did urine tests, and the players would be tested 2 to 3 times a season, random. And I mean, I was there a couple times, and my player walked off the 18th green. They said there was a guy there to meet him. Said, "Hey, you know what? It's your turn. And as soon as you sign your scorecard, let's go. Here's a little cup." And he'd go do his deal, and you know, that was it. And then he'd get a report about a week later.
What
you know, if he passed or not. So
they've gone to blood though now. So they're testing for HGH.
Yeah, the blood test, man. That's pretty extensive. I'm not sure why.
It's for HGH. You cannot detect human growth hormone in urine, but you can in blood. And so they've gone to the blood testing.
And do you think it has anything to do with now the golf being in the Olympics? Is it going to be in the next two Olympics now, it looks like?
Well, sure. Right. Yeah, they did that in the Olympics. They did do the blood testing.
Right.
So,
well, you have to. Yeah,
you have to.
The Olympics have their own rules, and so that's part of, Steve, maybe what they're doing is and I think it's all going through, or they're going by the same rules as the world drug testing guidelines, if you will, for all major sports.
What I want to know is, why does Frank make us take a blood test before that we do the show?
None of us would pass.
We want to make sure the blood alcohol level is up to the proper amount, so we can do this show.
Yeah, we do it from the inverse, Steve. We make sure there's enough alcohol in the system as opposed to the other way.
I think it would be. I think it's wine, isn't it? Wasn't there some kind of a wine thing you had going on?
Yeah. detects red wine, if you will, and all that. Hey, Steve. Also, hey, I'm curious.
Oh, sorry about that, Tim.
Go ahead.
We were talking about Jordan Spieth, and the last couple of days have been filling in for Hank, and we're talking about, you know, when a guy wins a tournament, Brooks Koepka won last week, U.S. Open, first major. Are the floodgates going to open for Brooks Koepka? Are the, you know, is he the next, could he be the next dominant player and all that? And I went over kind of five things that I thought would be important to be great at anything. I mean, you know, you could, this would be not only in golf, but any sport. Probably you could argue in business or in life how to be great. You know, the variables of greatness. You want to hear them?
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay, so the first one's talent. I mean, you've got to have physical and mental, and in golf specifically, you've got to have length. So you've got to have that type of talent. The second thing is, and everyone that reaches the PGA Tour has a great work ethic. Now, we hear, you know, people talking about players like Ricky Fowler say, is he working hard enough? Well, I promise you, he worked hard enough to get there. Now, sustaining that work ethic is something different. But everyone that has reached the PGA Tour has a great work ethic. And you can make that argument in any sport. I mean, it's not just, you know, a gift alone from God. You've got to work at it. The third thing is you got to have a good team supporting you, whether that's your parents or whether that's coaches and trainers and psychologists, whatever that may be for you. You've got to put together a good team, because you've got to have a great, the fourth thing, you've got to have a great game plan. You've got to have a game plan to improve all parts of your game. And all of those guys have that. Now, the thing that separates the best of the best and the dominant player like a Tiger Woods or Jack Nicklaus or Michael Jordan or Wayne Gretzky is you've got to have vision beyond your sport. It's a long-term vision. And I can remember Earl Woods talking about it when Tiger was a kid, that Tiger was going to use golf as a platform to do something great in the world. It's far beyond golf, far, you know, exceeding the golf course in the world of golf. And I think that's a big variable that I don't see a lot of the U.S. guys having that, you know, because money is a big motivator, and it's a great motivator until you get enough of it. And then it's a big distraction. So just saying, hey, I want to get out there and I want to make, you know, I want to win, or I want to make money, or I want to, you know, take care of my family, is a good motivation up to a certain point. But then after that, I mean, that money just doesn't take you to the best of the best. You've got to have something beyond that vision, beyond golf, outside of golf. And I think of all the American golfers, and I jotted down, you know, you have Patrick, Captain America, Patrick Reed, and Justin Thomas, and Brooks Koepka, and Ricky Fowler, Daniel Berger, and foreign players like John Rahm and Rory McIlroy. Young players, the only guy in that group that I think could be the next, you know, that could see, have a vision beyond golf and have that motivate him long term is Jordan Spieth. And all he needs to do is improve a little bit. And because he does, it looks like he does have the work ethic and the drive that's beyond golf, that he wants to do something much greater. He's using golf as a platform. But what are your thoughts on that, Tim?
Yeah, I think you're right in that. I think it's sometimes really hard to identify, because in my experience with athletes over the last 35 years or so in Dallas and working in the media, is most athletes, majority, are very self-centered, self-involved people. And I don't mean that as bad as it sounds. That's a lot of how they became who they are and how you have to be to a certain degree. But you're right. It's the rare one that that looks beyond that and says, you know what? What I'm doing is fine and good, but let me put it in perspective. Okay, I shoot baskets. I play goalie. I'm a golfer, whatever it might be. But in the big picture, there's a lot of things that are happening in the world, and a lot of them don't look outside that world, and they don't have to, quite honestly, because they've got enough insulation of friends and family and agents and managers and people that will let them just live their great life in their big walls and everything. So it is a rare guy. Jordan Spieth is always, to me, and we've been around him longer because he's from this area, is one of those guys that was always much older than he seemed. And back in 15, when he had such a phenomenal year, and everybody's saying, how's he doing this at 21? Well, it's because when he was 14 and 15, he was winning U.S. junior amateurs, and he was playing a Walker Cup teams, and he was always doing things and acting. And if you talk to people that were around him a lot, he was always 14 going on 25, and then he was 21 going on 35, and he always had a much more mature look on things. And even though he has a good time, he's a very dedicated guy and was a very dedicated kid. And you ask Cameron McCormick, his coach, same thing. He goes, he told me the first time I met him when he was like 12 years old, I want to win a Masters. And he goes, most kids tell me when I'm 12 that, you know, they want to play a good round today so they can have some ice cream when it's over.
You know, there's one word, Tim.
It's just a different mindset.
In my mind, there's one word that defines it all, and it's called discipline. He's a very disciplined young man. You see that being around his parents as much as we've been. And his family, they're disciplined. And discipline crosses a whole lot of roads there. Discipline in everything that you do. And moderation.
But Frank, you wouldn't find a guy more disciplined than Tiger Woods.
Well, yeah.
And Tiger Woods from 2010 on has not been the same person he was before the accident. My whole thinking is that, and the reason I say that this vision beyond golf is important is because, you know, he said after the fire hydrant, he said, you know, if I come back, I'm going to come back on my own terms. I'm going to play for me. I'm not going to play for anyone else. And I took that as, you know, his father instilled in him this obligation to do something far beyond golf. And the golf was a platform that he could use to do other things. And I think he lost that vision. And, you know, you could blame, in the recent history, you can blame a lot of his bad performances on injury. But back in 2010, you could. 2010, 11, 12, 13, he won five times in 2013.
Not that long
ago. But he, even back when Hank was at the end of Hank's time with him, he didn't practice as much. And he was certainly not practicing as much from 2010 on. He just kind of lost the focus of what got him to the dominance that we saw in him. And that's why I think it's got to be something that is beyond golf, something bigger than golf that's got to motivate him. And that's why if a dominant player comes from the United States, the only guy I see right now that's a pro or in college is Jordan Spieth. But he has to improve to do that. I see the next dominant player, I mean like dominant Tiger Woods type dominance, is coming from China. And because, or an Asian country, because probably, I mean, I'm going to stick to China. Here's why. The Chinese are us against the world. And that's exactly how Earl Woods was. It was them against everybody else. And they were the underdogs, and everyone's out to get us.
Yeah.
And that's what motivated them. And that's exactly what motivates. The Chinese have a tremendous, not obligation, but they have a tremendous loyalty to their country. And they're doing it, it's not for them, but they're doing it for their country and for their honor and for their families. And, that's why I think, I mean, there's work ethic second to none in Asia.
Yeah.
We see it in the dominance of the girls on the LPGA Tour. It's coming, too. It's coming on the PGA Tour. Because once you can see in the recent history, players get enough money or get a lot of money, it is a tremendous distraction for them. And that discipline, like Frank is saying, gets diluted. And because of opportunities and because of obligations and because of distractions, they lose that focus to be the best that they can be.
Yeah. Well, I think there's something to be said about that. And you've worked with a lot of Asian golfers and very young ones. People don't know. But, again, we're Steve Johnson with Hank Haney Golf. He's had parents that come over with how young, Steve? 5, 6, 7 years old? And spend weeks.
Yeah,
with
I've got a seven. She's here right now. Actually, she's from China. Her father is a very famous Chinese athlete. They treat the athletes different over there. I mean, they identify a sport and then they pour into it. I mean, it is a national project to pour into these kids. A lot of the kids don't go to school once they identify what their sport is. Now she goes to school, but her father's coming over. I'm going to meet him for the first time tomorrow, but we're going to talk about her development. And her development is a 7-year-old golfer. It's
wow.
Unbelievable.
Jeez. Wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you don't have that kind of dedication in a lot of other places in the world. Well, so you might be right. I mean, China has done a lot of things. They obviously take the Olympics very, very seriously and put everything into it and try to win as many medals, and there's a lot of country pride. That, quite honestly, I think, and maybe we're all old school, there doesn't seem to be the patriotism sometimes in the younger athletes that there used to be when you watch the Olympics, because, you know, it seems like it's just a different attitude in general. But I think you're right. In China and other Asian countries, I think they still have that instilled in them. So maybe we will see a name who
well, you
we don't
know
even
next,
know. As
not,
of yet,
not only in the summer
dominates.
Sports like golf, Tim, but the next big push for China is in the winter sports, and they've hired a bunch of Canadian NHL coaches to go over there and coach up their hockey program.
Really?
So
yeah, didn't even know they had one.
Get ready. Well, you're not going to have the Howard Chucks, and you're going to have the Chungs and the, you know, I mean, you wait.
Yeah.
They will. They're coming. They're coming to the NHL here within probably 10 years.
Oh, boy. Well, it's better to fight it out. It's better to fight it out that way. Let's fight our battles on the sporting fields and not otherwise.
Not with missiles.
No, not with missiles.
Hey, Steve, before we let you go, and we've got to let you out of here, give us a quick – we've got to go down the road about, you know, 4 or 5 tournaments here, but any early favorites for the Open Championship? Royal Birkdale coming up in the middle of July. Who are you liking?
The course.
No, we're seeing a course. That's very – Royal Birkdale is very similar to Erin Hills.
It looks
a lot like Erin Hills. The bunkers are a little bit different, but the rolling fairways, the wind, I mean, I think it's a bomber's course again. Now, Mark O'Meara won a tournament there a long time ago at Royal Birkdale, the Lawrence Battley Invitational, holed out 2 7 irons with 9 holes left in the tournament, win the tournament. But I mean, it's a long hitter's course. And I think we're going to see a lot of – we saw a wannabe links course in Erin Hills. We're going to see the real deal at Royal Birkdale.
Well, it'll be interesting. Henrik Stenson, defending champion, maybe ready to – he's playing right now in Germany at the BMW International and playing pretty well there. So maybe we'll see a repeat. We don't know. But he certainly is going to have his – and he's got the distance that we're talking about. It's just fascinating. The major championships, while there's still some good tournaments coming up, the Quicken Loans, Greenbrier, John Deere, boy, I tell you, everybody focuses on those majors.
On the majors.
Before we know it, they'll be heading over the big pond. So, Steve, we appreciate your time. Thanks so much, and have a great time today. Sitting in for Hank on Sirius XM.
Yeah, check him out, Sirius XM Radio. He's sitting in for Hank today. Steve, thank you so much. It's always great to have you, and have a great show today, this morning.
Thank you. Talk to you later, guys.
Okay. See you soon.
Okay. All right, Steve Johnson, managing partner with Hank Haney Golf. Always got something to say. And I'll tell you what, Frank, he's just like when you can tell when we're talking to him on the show, just like he teaches his pupils. He does what he says. When he says you've got to have a plan, he does that when he goes on the air. He's got a plan of things he wants to talk about, like his list of 5 things to be great.
Yeah. He does a great job on that show, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
You know, it ought to be the Hank Haney and Steve Johnson show. Hank, if you're listening, buddy, throwing you under the bus.
He's on there a lot.
He is on there a lot, and he does a fabulous job. I like it when he and Hank are on there together, too, because they go back and forth and – you know, he doesn't.
Each other for
Steve, they're buddies, and he doesn't cow down to Hank whatsoever. I mean, they get at it sometimes.
Yeah,
kind of like you
disagree,
and I.
They disagree. Yeah. I mean, it's.
By the way, Brendan Sweeney from the French Lick Resort asked me to send you a message.
Oh yeah, but the last time we were on, let me preface this. Last time we were on, I assume this is what you're talking about. Earlier this week, Brendan Sweeney from the French Lick Resort was on, and he was talking about their golf course,
the
Pete Dye course. From the tips at French Lick is 8,050 yards or something like that. And I said, well, the longest golf course, blah, blah. And I went through an Art Selinger story with long drivers. We were in the Boston area and we played a course or were on a course that was over 8, 1,300 yards or something like that. And he said, no, there isn't in a course that's that long, or disagreed that French Lick doesn't have the longest course from the tips or whatever. So that's, I guess, now what you're going to say. What did Brendan have to say about it?
Well, I can't say it on the air, but...
Because I sent you what Art sent to me. Did you see that?
I saw that, 8,300 and some odd yards. I sent it to Brendan.
25 yards.
And Brendan said, he said, I got to go. I'll call you back. I'm making a phone call. So they're looking at extending two tee boxes so they can be the longest course in America.
So he didn't disagree with me.
Well, he said, you said 8,500. And he said, no, there's no course 8,500 yards. Oh, so,
whatever.
You know,
I just said it was
8,325.
I knew it was longer. And, yeah, really, really. And Art, because Art even said, he, for a charity, he and another long driver, Brian Pavlett.
Oh, yeah.
For a charity, played all day. Did you see what he said?
I saw that. I couldn't believe it.
They played all day, and they played like seven rounds of golf at 8,300 yards plus. And he said the average score, his average score in seven rounds was 83 with a round of 76. On a course that's 8,300 yards.
That's just crazy stupid.
I mean, to shoot a 76, that was, you know,
well,
10 years ago.
Why?
Playing much better, but
why?
Yeah, why?
Why? Why would you do that?
For the same reason Brendan. For the same reason Brendan wants the bragging rights, I guess. Right?
People I
want
guess.
To say this is the. I think Art said that's, and I don't know if it still is, was, or maybe still is, the longest golf course in the world at sea level. I think there's some.
Oh,
that are longer,
here we go. Yeah.
That are way up or something.
But hey,
at sea level, he said that's the longest golf course.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. We talked about it. We the Senior LPGA Championship coming up next month. In July 1st, 8th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, right, but whatever. Those dates will be there, so we'll be on that course playing it. I want to back up, though,
and
for
I'm
a minute.
And walk it off.
Yeah, I'll walk it off for you. We'll call Sky Caddy and have them map the course.
I'm waiting for my apology from Brendan. So
I know. Okay. He'll listen to the show. He'll have something to say. Well, hey, let's back up to the Travelers for a minute. I've got an interesting nugget about the state of Connecticut.
Yes.
Does first off, they have a state insect. Did you know that? Connecticut has a state insect. True. It's
really?
The praying mantis.
Cockroach.
No, the cockroach. No, that's the state insect of Florida. The praying mantis.
Really?
The praying mantis. This is a nugget from our executive producer, Dave Logue. Can you believe that? A state insect? I need to look that up and see if... if we have state insects,
that's a proud insect. They kind of go around with their chest pumped up, right?
Yeah,
their antlers
and
high because they're so proud that we're the state bug.
Now here's another first too. Okay, yeah. So Connecticut's the home of the first hamburger, 1895. The first hamburger was made in 1895. I have to disagree with that.
Oh,
I mean,
why?
Well,
Brendan Sweeney, what are you going with?
Well,
I'm
going to go with the caveman era because, you know, I mean, yeah, you smash the dinosaur meat together and cook it over some fire, and there you go. A dino burger. And the Polaroid camera was invented there in 1934. And the helicopter in 1939.
Right?
And the first color TV in 1948. Oh, come
on. Every state has some fun facts about it, and when you go out on the tour to do some of the play-by-play and some of the events, and Dave Lowe, we're talking about, executive producer, sends out a lot of information that is sometimes trivial, sometimes funny, but oftentimes kind of enlightening, because you realize that every state, whether it's a little state like Connecticut or Rhode Island or big states like Texas and California, they all have really unique things about them that you would go, I didn't know that, like we're doing right now. And so that is interesting. The first color TV and the first helicopter, you're saying?
First helicopter. Les Nessman.
You wonder why.
The news,
You wonder why. The frozen chicken.
Here we're off the
frozen
rails.
Turkeys.
As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
Heck, they could fly.
It's going to be a great tournament
also,
this week. I love this tournament. I like the golf course. You know, Pete Dye, they took an old course and Pete Dye redesigned it, and then it's been redesigned a couple of times since then.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful place. I'd love to be up there. We might have to make it a point to get up there next year for this tournament. And as was mentioned earlier, the John Deere. We know the folks at John Deere. They've invited us, and they said we could do the big dig if we came. If Golf Talk America comes and does a show live from the John Deere Classic, we can get on those big earth movers and do the big dig with the players.
Is that something you want to do?
Yeah.
They're going to put you to work? Somehow that they made fun out of putting you to work. They're going to have you move dirt from here to there.
It's fun.
It's fun to move dirt.
Said the big dig, the first person that came to mind was Pete Dye because he moved a lot of dirt at French Lick.
Oh gosh. A lot of those guys do. That's amazing when they put a golf course. By the way, Jordan Spieth got another birdie back, so he adds right now again early in the second, back to seven, so sole position of first. We'll see if Jordan. I mean, this could.
I'd love to see him win this tournament.
Rejuvenate him for the year. Yeah, if he goes wire to wire, it'd be very interesting. Well, and certainly, he's got to be someone you look forward to going to Royal Birkdale as well. So we'll see how he holds up here in Connecticut. One other note, too, a sad note, but not necessarily that sad. Anybody that dies at almost 100. It's hard to be sad because they had a phenomenal life. We all hope we get to be 96. But Sandy Tatum, former USGA president, known for what quote, Frank? I'll give it to you. Famous quote from back at the massacre at Wingfoot back in 74.
You've got it, so you go with it. I know exactly what you're talking about, to identify the best players. Yeah.
Yeah, and Hale Irwin won at 7 over.
Yeah, 7
over par.
Put that
in comparison to what we just saw at Erin Hill, 16 under. A little bit of a switch there. He won at 7 over because the tournament was, and the course at Wingfoot was so difficult, and a lot of people complained about it. And his quote was, "We're not trying to humiliate the best players in the world. We're simply trying to identify them."
Yeah, that is great.
Very apropos because it is exactly what they're trying to do at the U.S. Open is say, hey, somebody's going to win. Somebody will hold up the trophy and
Tatum.
Be thrilled to death no matter how tough it is.
Frank Tatum. Frank Sandy Tatum. Great first name,
Sandy
right?
Tatum.
He was a
6 years old.
Stanford golf team. He was a Rhodes Scholar, a championship golfer, and an attorney. He made his living being a lawyer in his beloved city of San Francisco. So our best wishes to his family and our tear in our eye. Okay, he's a great man.
Cool.
Just really cool dude.
Yeah.
So sad to see him
go. But that comes in relation to what we're talking about at Erin Hills because a lot of people did make that opposite complaint. Okay, it's not too tough.
Too easy.
Yeah. It's too easy. You've got to make it tougher. Now, maybe there's a fine line or a line you can go to between 7 over and 16 under, but I've always agreed with the USGA when they've said, you know what, let's use par as a great score. You can shoot par and be very happy with it or around par, and I've liked that. I've liked when people have won at 1 or 2 over or 2 or 3 under, whatnot, and I'd like to see them get back to that. We talked about next year. At Shinnecock could be that very venue to
can't,
see it.
Can't
happen.
Wait for that and, one. We will be there for that.
Yeah.
With Bob Bupka.
Yeah, we'll be there.
With the man.
Bob Bupka. Yep. He should know some great dining areas because that's about, 10 minutes from where he grew up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Bob loves to dine. So, as we all do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, hey, a quick shout out to Janice Self, who's Bob Bupka's producer, for helping us. They help us a lot and, Bob appears on Golf Talk America, courtesy of the Vertical Groove Driver, vertgolf.com. Check them out. Good product. Have you gotten yours yet?
I have not. And
I'm looking at mine.
She got hold of me because Janice is the one who's kind of organizing that for us. And she asked me again. She said, "You get it?" And she checked on it. She said, "They told me it had shipped." Now, that was just a couple of days ago. She said, "You might get it
today.
In the next couple of days." So we'll see. Hopefully.
Yeah. Did you get the jumbo grip or the standard grip?
I got standard grip.
I got the jumbo grip.
You said it comes in such a beautiful package.
I'm not going to spoil it for you. Just check it out. When you get it's pretty cool. And be careful that there's something in the head cover, too. So make sure before you try to put that.
Is us, or does everybody get this beautiful?
Everybody gets it like that.
Delivery. Really?
Yeah. Wow. It's going to be pretty cool.
I can't wait. Yeah
it's going to be pretty cool.
I can't wait to play with it. So
what's on tap before we get out of here? What's on tap for this weekend for you? Golf, obviously. Where are you playing? What are you doing?
I'm going to play a little golf tomorrow, or today rather, with a friend of mine, a former producer of mine, here at the Mighty 11, Channel 11, CBS in Dallas, and possibly his niece. His niece is her name is Paige Gibson, and she's a very good, you'll like the story, she's a very good junior golfer, although I guess she's still a junior. I think she's 19 or 18 or somewhere in that area, but very good golfer, and has moved to Scottsdale to work with someone, so she's very serious about getting on tour and everything. Yeah, so she's... And I've never played with her, but, you know, Jeff raves about her. So hopefully she'll school me today if she gets to play. And she's one of the few people that we know of, Frank, that somehow was out in Scottsdale, and I can't remember his name. Who's the owner, founder of PXG Golf?
Oh gosh, I was thinking Carson Solheim. I was thinking Ping.
Mr. GoDaddy.
Yeah, the GoDaddy remember? Founder. Yeah, whatever his name is.
Whoever. Yeah.
Our clubs. Yeah, that guy. Yeah.
Saw her playing and said, "I want you playing our clubs." And so she plays PXGs.
Where are our PXGs?
Had her make her a set and everything. I'm like, yeah, well, apparently he saw our game and looked the opposite way.
Not so true. We've
it was
got
different.
Game.
I do not want you playing our clubs.
Well, then I'm going to go buy them and play them. For meanness.
My God.
Well, we had them on the show. We had one of their big dogs on the show at the Masters while we were there.
Their tour rep.
Azalea House. And he said, give our name to the marketing people. They wanted to do some kind of a deal with us. What happened with that, PXG? Come on.
Maybe we could. I might follow up on that.
Why don't you follow up on
that? We could at least test a driver or a wedge or something.
We want to test the full set. So two full sets from PXG.
That may not happen.
They've got a few laying around. Come on.
Well, everybody does.
By the way, for everybody in the Mid-South and the Quarter, get ready. It's coming. It's getting dark here and nasty, and I'm thinking I'm going to Papa Murphy's, Tim, and load up on a couple of pizzas.
Oh.
Get them ready for cooking
home?
Tonight. Yeah.
You're going to hunker down?
Hunker down, turn on the golf.
Like
of course,
stay,
I have DirecTV.
Like Tennessee?
I have DirecTV, and you know what happens when storms come through with DirecTV.
It's a little bit.
So I will be watching it on my iPad on PGHR Live. PGHR Live. Check it out. And check out, by the way, for everybody, check out our other podcasts, the PGHR Replay. You've got On the Mark with Mark Immelman, and you have Talk of the Tour with John Swantech, all at pghtour.com/podcast, which you probably already know that since you listen to this show, and you go to that page. But check them out. They have great shows, a lot of fun.
And I want to give a shout-out, too, to a friend of mine who started a company. It could help you, Frank. We'll be talking about it. Compassionate Finance is the name of it. So go to their website, compassionatefinance.com.
Yeah.
Compassionatefinance.com. And what they do is, if you have a procedure, and Frank, you're going
to... I'm about to do implants.
About getting a dental procedure. It's not always covered by insurance. Same thing could be the case if I had a broken nose once and I let it go for years and didn't do anything. Then I had to get it fixed. Well, the insurance wasn't going to help me at that point if it's cosmetic or whatever. And so Compassion Finance comes in and says, we'll figure out the terms and make it easy for you to pay without, because sometimes it's a lot of money out of pocket.
Ooh.
You're like, okay, I don't really want to write that big check. They'll help you to finance it at very, very reasonable rates. So check those guys out. If you have anything like that is coming down the pike for you that you want to look better, feel better, and it's not always covered, compassionatefinance.com. Good people there that will help you find a doctor in your area that will perform the procedure and make it very simple for you and affordable.
Let's
check them
plastic
out.
Plastic surgery?
Yes, Frank. If you're gonna get that tummy tuck.
I could look like George Clooney. Are you telling me I could look like George Clooney? By the way, before we go, and I know we're all over the place here, but before we go, just for our listeners, if you didn't hear, George Clooney and his partner just sold their tequila company for how much money, Tim?
$1 billion.
$1 billion for tequila.
Yeah.
For a brand of tequila.
That they started 4 years ago,
Frank. What's the name of the tequila? Dos Amigos or something like that?
It's Casa Amigos.
Casa Amigos.
Friend's house. Friendly house.
Friendly. It's real friendly when you're drinking that stuff.
His partner is Randy Gerber, who is married to Cindy Crawford, the supermodel. So they're friends. And here's the interesting story. And their third partner is Mike Melman. Do you know that name?
Yes.
Discoveryland.
Yes.
A lot of different properties.
Yes.
And he's down in Cabo and did a big development down in Cabo. I should talk to Steve Johnson. Steve knows him very, very well. He did a big development here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area called Vaquero. Mike Melman did as well. Same thing. So those three started this company, and they just wanted to make tequila for themselves because they like tequila. And they're like, oh, it's just enough for us to enjoy. So they went to a company. They got the formula they wanted. They all put in their 2 cents worth. And they're making like 500, 800 bottles a year. And he'd give them away to friends. And finally, the company came that was distributing or making the tequila and said, the government says we can't just make your personal tequila. It has to be a larger distribution. That's the only reason they got bigger. Otherwise, they'd still be making it just for friends and family. They got bigger. A lot of people started buying it. And 4 years later, big company out of Europe, mega liquor company, buys them for $1 billion.
Was it InBev that bought them? Was it InBev that bought them?
No, not InBev. There's another one of those, though. Okay. Another one that...
$1 billion. All righty.
Paid $1 billion for just a little... tequila that they wanted to drink amongst themselves when they're down in Mexico.
Are you saying it pays to be a drunk? I mean,
does it pay to be George Clooney?
Well, yeah. You know.
It's good. Somebody put a tweet out there and they said it's good to see guys like George Clooney catch a break once in a while.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
What else? What else? Yeah, what else happened for him that doesn't work?
And his aunt was Rosemary Clooney, one of the most famous big band singers. So. How nice.
There we go.
Hey, we've been told to go. We got to go.
We're out of here. We're done. We're done with tequila. We're done with everything. Thanks to Steve Johnson with Hank Haney Golf for being with us. We appreciate it. Thanks to every one of you guys for listening to us. Keep downloading us. Keep following us on Twitter and Facebook. We do love each and every one of you. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.